Well, first of all, happy Friday the 13th.
It's good timing. Ooh.
Yes, so if you have any cosmophobia, maybe we could make up some scenario for the world to end today.
That would be good.
Okay, one of the big ones is that there's a belief that the planets will all line up in a row, and that certainly won't happen. You can go to the Sky and Telescope November issue, and they have a nice little plot of where the planets will all be on the winter solstice in 2012.
Now, where does this come from? Does this come directly from the myth? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because this one is really, really common about the planets lining up.
I know it's very common. And it often comes from various sources. For example, glitches in planetarium software that people buy. So they think the planets have all lined up. But
it's not so. So tell me what that source is again if people want to go check it out.
The Sky and Telescope.
Okay.
November issue.
All right, good.
It's an article on debunking 2012 by Dr. Krupp, who's director of the Griffith Observatory, and he's one of the contributing editors of Sky and Telescope magazine, which is a renowned amateur magazine. They're not going to line up. There never is an eclipse with the center of the Milky Way. That's another one. So they're expecting the planets to all line up and kind of point past this line of the planets with the sun to the center of the Milky Way. But that's another thing that doesn't happen.
Now, the reason they're saying that the planets are going to line up and all of these astronomical things are going to happen, because that is, in effect, what's going to cause all this havoc. Is that correct? Like the tidal waves, like all the craziness that will happen with the physical Earth.
That's what it says on the website. So there's a few things that they say on the movie website, which have to do with solar activity, crustal realignment, and planet Nibiru. Now, we won't be at the peak of our solar cycle, so that one is out. They're saying that there'll be a crustal shift. They're saying that this is because the magnetic poles will shift. Now, there isn't any relationship between when the magnetic poles shift and the crust. So the kind of north-south, the way we think of the north and the south pole and how that's kind of related to the crust of the Earth, the magnetic pole doesn't line up with the north and south pole. So the magnetic north is off somewhat in alignment always from the north pole. So if the north pole shifts places with the south magnetic pole, I'm talking about just the magnetic poles here, nothing happens. This has happened many, many times over the lifetime of the Earth, and it hasn't affected life at all. So that's not going to cause the crust to shift. So, and there's also another complicated magnetic field configuration around our planet Earth. So if the general magnetic field that we think of when the field, we call it a field reversal, when it changes the north and south orientation, when the north magnetic pole becomes a south magnetic pole, when that happens, there will still be another magnetic field protecting us from the solar radiation.
Now, what about this planet Nibiru?
The planet Nibiru is taken from a number of different legends and put together from the Sumerians. And the other thing is the Mayan calendar kind of switches over like an odometer, resets itself. And people are saying, well, then that must be the end of time. So they folded together Mayan myth with Sumerian myth. Now, this has been the planet has been a really interesting one because generally we call a planet Planet X when we feel some sort of gravitational tugs, and that's how they found Pluto, both by the kind of gravitational tug on Neptune. And so for a long time they were looking to see what these other small kind of changes of motion were caused by, and we found actually that it's by a whole bunch of little pieces of material out in of what we now call the Kuiper Belt. And so we don't use the label Planet X anymore because there's many little bits and pieces of rocks that'll mainly be comets, behave like comets. And there's at very large distances, there's a couple of these chunks of debris are like Pluto, and so they're called Plutoids now. So the myth says that there's one big planet, not a bunch of little ones. And the myth also, well, when people started to look at this myth, some of the people who publish on this mysterious planet X or Nibiru said that when we had the infrared satellite, NASA's IRAS satellite in space, a lot of the infrared objects detected when we hadn't seen their morphology yet, they said one of these would be planet Nibiru or planet X. And so they limited it to an infrared glowing object. So instead of glowing in the same kind of light as our sun does mainly, it would be more, the heat would be more in the infrared range of the electromagnetic spectrum. Well, what happened was we discovered that these things are either the galaxies or a kind of small star that really hasn't turned on its fusion engine yet called a brown dwarf. So what they did was they switched and they said, oh, well, then it must be a brown dwarf, one of these small stars that's hiding behind our sun. So what we thought about today was, well, what happens if it happens to be a brown dwarf? Now, according to the websites, the brown dwarf or planet Nibiru will come close into our inner solar system every 3,600 years. But our solar system has been around for 4.5 billion years, which means roughly this brown dwarf, this small star or very large planet, would have interacted with our solar system, the inner planets, 1.25 million times. So 1.25 million times before this, we should have been having these kind of cataclysmic things happening on Earth.
And we haven't.
We haven't, and we haven't seen the brown dwarf either, which we would have noticed with our new infrared telescopes. Now, another thing that we looked at was, well, how big is a brown dwarf compared to the Earth? And it's about 4,000 times as large as the Earth in terms of its mass. And if you have any objects that gravitationally interact with each other, very interesting, non-intuitive things happen. It's not just like a cataclysmic crash-up, like a car pile-up. Instead, the very interesting kind of pulls happen. So if you want to mimic something gravitationally interacting with something that's thousands of times larger than it, you can like take a tennis ball to be the Earth, the smaller thing, and the basketball to be the larger thing. And if you take the basketball and hold it up in the air and you place on top of it the tennis ball and say, okay, now they're gravitationally interacting, they're pulling on each other, and you let them go, one is when they bounce on the ground, the basketball will barely bounce. It'll do the thing that you expect it to do. But they'll share energy, and it'll impart some of the energy of its bounce to the tennis ball. And that tennis ball goes flying way off. So what would happen is that if we did interact with it, the Earth would have been flung out of the solar system, would be flung away from the sun, and we had 1.25 million opportunities for us to be flung away from our sun in the past. And now, that hasn't happened.
Now, how do you know that it hasn't happened? Maybe we've been flung away from the sun, and then we've been, you know, sort of crashed into our alien home base, and then our memories have been erased, and then we've been flung back into our solar system, and this has happened 1.5 million times, and nobody has known, you know, because our memories are erased. That's my next...
Kind of hard to do and keep all of the Earth together at the same time. I mean, if we get flung away from the sun, the temperature on Earth is going to drop really, really, really quickly, right? And we're not going to have light to sustain any plants or anything. And the oceans will turn to ice, and I think we're sunk.
I have to work on my theory there a little bit. Maybe.
Yeah, you have to work on it really hard. But I mean, it brings it down to like I guess if we want to speculate a bit or ramble on about who owns the rules for truth, you know, so if someone can get you to be convinced that they own all the rules to tell you what's true and what's false, then you might want to believe them. I mean, they're having a fun time making money off of us, so they want us to believe they hold the rules for truth. Actually, the slogan for the movie is something like, what is it? Know the truth?
Find out the truth.
Find out the truth.
Yeah.
So they're trying to do that. They make you feel empowered by knowing some other truth than what's, the usual story that one thinks about.
And the disturbing part in all of this is that we can kind of make fun of it, but all of us, the general public, do not have the same education knowledge that you have, right? And we don't have that. We're not running around talking about physics and the planets, and we don't know all these things. And so these kind of movies come along, and these kind of myths, legends, and they scare the heck out of everybody.
Yeah, it's called cosmophobia. It's really disturbing that people are made afraid of the universe and the sun, our own sun, which is, you know, our life source. They become so afraid of it, and that is very disturbing. What's also disturbing about a movie like this is that it produces all of these websites that are pseudoscientific and have a very realistic feel. And it's called, I heard, viral marketing when they produce all these websites. And it's going to be an unfortunate effect that people, instead of enjoying astronomy, are going to be fearful of it. Do you have any suggestions for making it non-fearful and fun again?
I say just make fun of it and and take it for what it is, and that it's fiction, and realize that, you know, all of these things that you can take, you know, the whole thing about the Mayan calendar and the Mayans or all of that kind of stuff. I mean, these kind of things have been around for a long time. There's been different, you know, prophecies but instead, you know, why do we have to focus that it's something disastrous instead of focusing on something that could be great? You know, like it's a shift in another way. It's a shift in, you know, something greater for humanity. Instead of it being a shift that, you know, our world is going to end, which, you know, gets a little tiring because we're always hearing this in different contexts throughout the years.
Yeah. The other thing is the Mayan calendar didn't predict the end now. So it's an interpretation of other people for that. One of the things that I heard was that, you know, my own day timer is going to end on December 31st, but that doesn't mean the end of the world. It means the start of the new year, and it is actually a new counting cycle for the Mayans, right? So we could pick any day, and instead of making, you know, Friday the 13th a day of terror and fear, we can make it a day of celebration, too.
Exactly. Those are great words. So you mean the world's not going to end because my day timer ends on December 31st, too.
Yeah.
I think that means something.
I better have bought a new day timer a month ago.
Exactly. All right, Dr. English, it was so great talking to you. I want to thank you so much.
You're very welcome.